in the air, everywhere. Bright and beautiful music. KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle.
CBS News is next. It's now 10 o'clock.
CBS News. Informed sources in Washington are saying that President Ford has personally approved secret payments to anti-communist politicians in Italy. I'm Jerry Landy, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The New York Times reports that the president sanctioned those payments early last month and that at least $6 million has been funneled secretly to Italian anti-communist political leaders by the Central Intelligence Agency. The Times sources, who are described as having direct knowledge of the administration's covert operation, say the payments are intended to head off further political gains in Italy by the Communist Party. That report coincides with reports from Italy itself that national elections may be at hand. The Italian Socialist Party is expected to vote Wednesday to withdraw its support from the coalition government headed by Premier Aldo Moro. This would create a political crisis which could force the dissolution of the Italian parliament and early elections. Italian observers say the elections could well result in big new successes at the polls by the Communist Party. More news after this.
Imagine what it would be like to have a microwave oven with a memory, so you could tell it to defrost a roast, cook it, then call you when dinner's ready. Wouldn't that be fantastic? Well, it is fantastic, because that's exactly what the revolutionary Amana Touchmatic Radar Range microwave oven can do for you. Because it's the first microwave oven with a memory. You take a frozen roast out of the freezer and put it in the Amana Touchmatic Radar Range. You select defrost and cooking times by touching numbers on the control panel. Push start, and the Amana Touchmatic Radar Range memory takes over. It remembers to defrost, remembers to wait for the temperature to even, remembers with split-second accuracy just how long to cook, remembers to shut itself off. It even remembers to call you for dinner. Then the timer remembers the exact time of day and displays it in lights. Get together with a friend and go see your Amana retailer this week. They'll show you the Amana Touchmatic Radar Range in action. Fantastic.
The British government is ordering an infantry battalion to South Armagh in Northern Ireland to damp down a chain reaction of reprisal killings that climaxed Monday in the massacre of 10 Protestants by members of the IRA. Meantime, other security measures have been put into effect by the British. From Belfast, Peter Martin reports.
British Army helicopters using powerful air-to-ground searchlights have been patrolling the border of Northern Ireland and the Republic as part of the stepped-up military activity in the area. On the ground, British troops have been conducting more intensive road checks, stopping and searching cars, and asking drivers and passengers for identification. The operations are part of the military response to the recent sectarian violence in the border area of the country. The additional 600 British troops being sent to Northern Ireland are expected to be pressed into action as soon as they arrive. They will bring the troop strength in Northern Ireland to 14,600 men. Protestant politicians, representing the majority of the population in this country, are demanding a tougher policy by the British government against the provisional IRA. Peter Martin for CBS News, Belfast.
One of six major Democratic contenders opened to his New Hampshire primary campaign on Tuesday. Terry Sanford, the president of Duke University and a former governor of North Carolina, is calling for a full employment policy by the federal government. Jobs for everyone who wants to work as the cure for slums, for crime, for the crisis of higher and higher welfare costs. Sanford in Concord, New Hampshire, describing his economic policy as one that puts people first. Several major Democratic contenders are bypassing New Hampshire, saving their resources for the Massachusetts primary a week later on March 2nd. One of them, Senator Henry Jackson. Jackson opened his campaign in Boston Tuesday under the watchful statues of John Adams and Daniel Webster in historic Faneuil Hall. Jackson attacking President Ford's Angola policy, in particular criticizing Mr. Ford's reluctance to stop exporting food or machinery to Russia until the Kremlin ends its intervention in Angola. Now this.
First down and goal to go at the 4-yard line is Joe Capp. And that deep
holding again will be quarterback Lenny Dawson.
The ball is down. The kick's up. It's end over end. Taylor breaks the tackle.
Those were Super Bowl highlights, a remembrance of things past. I'm Win Elliott, CBS Radio Network Sports. In the weekend of January 17th and 18th, I'm going to be here with 28 super broadcasts about those Super Bowls of the past. You'll also hear full live coverage of this year's Super Challenge with Jim Kelly and Ed Ingalls. All the color and play-by-play right from Miami. After the game, I'm going to have special reports. We'll talk to the winners and the losers. Boy, it's going to be a whole weekend of super pro football. 28 special sports broadcasts before and after the game, and all the action of the game itself with Jim Kelly and Ed Ingalls right from Miami. The whole package right here on CBS Radio Sports, Saturday and Sunday, January 17th and 18th, exclusively over most of these CBS Radio Network stations.
Vice President Nelson Rockefeller will have a working seat at the Republican National Convention. He's been named head of the New York State delegation, the second biggest at the convention, giving Rockefeller a potential base from which to launch his own bid for the nomination if he so chooses. The big New York delegation is going to Kansas City uncommitted. Publicly, Rockefeller says he favors President Ford, but some of his associates are quoted as saying Rockefeller is ready to jump into the race against Ronald Reagan if the president falters in the primaries. I'm Jerry Landay, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI. The weather outlook, mostly cloudy with rain at times through Thursday. Highs in the lower 40s, lows in the mid-30s. And currently in downtown Seattle, it's 40 degrees. It's 38 at the airport. The barometer falling slightly, it reads 30.22. Taking a look at sports in the National Basketball Association, Atlanta beat Milwaukee 91-87. Washington over Kansas City, 103-98. It was New Orleans, 104, Chicago, 98. And Buffalo defeated Los Angeles, 114-113. In the National Hockey League, Vancouver 5, Washington 3. The Islanders over Kansas City, 8-1. Atlanta beat Detroit, 4-3. And St. Louis down the Rangers, 5-2. In the World Hockey Association, Toronto 6, San Diego 4, Houston beat Cincinnati 7-3, and Edmonton 3, Indianapolis nothing. The CBS Radio Mystery Theater is next on KIXI. The time is 7 past 10.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. The great French writer Balzac called life a human comedy. Our own Mark Twain saw it as a human tragedy. What's in a name? There are a great many laughs in a true tragedy and plenty of tears in a genuine comedy. Mark Twain's long suit was irony. And now we have an opportunity to see how he plays that kind of hand in one of the greatest stories of deception ever written.
And there's no doubt about it. You can be wealthy.
Oh, I like that.
Famous.
Famous, too.
Absolutely. And powerful.
Wealthy, famous, powerful?
A force in the world of art.
It sounds wonderful. That's what you're giving me. And in return, what do I have to give you?
Your life.
Mystery drama, Is He Living or Is He Dead?, was adapted from the Mark Twain classic especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Alexander Scourby. It is sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule, and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Isn't it nice to know you're free? To see the things you want to see. To touch the heights you dare to reach. To know you're all that you can be.
Based on EPA tests, Buick's midsize Century with available automatic transmission and a Buick V6 got 17 miles per gallon in the city test and 25 in the highway test. Of course, those figures are only estimates. The mileage you get may vary. But what it means is this. Buick's V6 Centuries with automatic transmission got better overall EPA mileage ratings than any other U.S. midsize with automatic transmission. Nice going, Buick.
Free spirit, Buick on the wings of the wind.
California. See your Buick dealer for EPA figures.
I'm Joe Dowd. I'm not an actor, I'm a father. So forgive me if I'm not good at this, but there's something I'd like to ask you. If you can understand what it's like for a kid to hear he has hemophilia, the bleeder's disease, and there's no cure for it, well, then think what it's like to hear there's a medicine that can stop your bleeding, but you can't afford it. It must be like torture. The medicine is called a clotting factor, but it costs about $26,000 every year. So most hemophilia kids can't afford the medicine they need. That's the problem my son Tim has. And my son Joey, too. Hemophilia needs your help. A few dollars to do research that will bring down the cost of the medicine so kids like mine can afford the help their fathers can't give them. Please, help hemophilia, because what good is the medicine if you can't afford it?
National Hemophilia Foundation, Box 675, New York.
It is unfortunate but true that a great many creative men are killed by poverty. As a matter of fact, the circumstance has been so universal that it has even been made romantic. How many stories, operas, plays are about artists who starve in garrets? Van Gogh, Schubert, Mozart, Rembrandt, Poe, to name but a tiny few, all died of neglect. Must it be ever thus? Mark Twain is about to present another perspective.
I was spending the month of March, 1892, at Mentone on the Riviera, fully enjoying the flooding sunshine, the balmy air, and the brilliant blue sea, without the marring additions of human fuss and display, which one encounters a few miles away at Nice and Monte Carlo. As a rule, the rich do not come here, but now and then a rich man does show up, and I got acquainted with one. Partially to disguise him, I shall call him Smith. One morning, we were having breakfast at the Hotel des Anglais, when he exclaimed,
"Quick! Cast your eye at that man."
Which man?
The one just going out the door.
Yes?
Do you know who he is?
Why are you so excited, Mr.
Smith? No, do you?
Well, I think so. He spent several days here just before you arrived.
Do you know anything about him?
Well, someone said he's an old, retired, and very rich silk manufacturer from Lyon. Or was it Lille?
Well, what else do you know about him?
Well, I don't know anything about him except...
Except what?
Well, I would assume he must be all alone in the world.
Oh, why?
Why? Well, he looks so sad and dreamy, and he doesn't talk with anyone.
Would you know his name?
Yes, it's Théophile Magnan. Well?
Well, what?
Well, what are you going to tell me?
Tell you?
About the old gentleman.
Oh.
Smith, taking you by and large, you're quite a character. Here, the mere sight of a person sends you into a perfect fit. One might have thought the man was Jack the Ripper, the way you seem to take on about him. And now you simply cannot say, oh, and just haul down the flag. Smith, are you awake?
Shh, I'm trying to think.
About what?
It's one of Hans Andersen's beautiful little stories.
Well, how did he get into the discussion?
I remember only one part of it.
Do you remember the old man who just left?
Seems a child has a caged bird, which it loves, but thoughtlessly neglects. And the bird pours out its sweet song, unheard and unheeded. You follow this?
Well, yes.
In time, hunger and thirst assail the poor bird. Its song grows feeble and plaintive, and finally ceases, and the bird dies. Well, the child comes by, and you know what happens, don't you?
Well, I would say the child sees the poor dead bird and is smitten to the heart with remorse. And then with bitter tears, the child calls his mates and they bury the bird with elaborate pomp and the tenderest grief.
Oh, then you have read the story.
Oh, it's an old story. The children don't know that they're only aping their elders, who also starve poets to death. And then spend enough on their funerals and monuments to have kept them alive and made them easy and comfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
And now, how about the old gentleman?
Twain, can you keep a secret?
No better than you. You look like a man who's bursting to break one.
Well, it's been a secret for many years between me and two others, but I'm going to break the seal now. You know, a long time ago, I was a young artist.
You?
Mm-hmm.
You, Smith, were an artist?
And I wandered around the French countryside, just sketching, you know.
Were you successful?
Oh, bless you, no. I was starving.
Well, how did you live?
A typically American question.
Well, why not? I'm a typical American.
The answer is, I pawned my way across France. One by one, I sold all my belongings till I was reduced to the clothes on my back.
Hmm.
And even they started to go, one by one. Finally, almost naked and down and out, I found myself in a small Breton village. And there I was taken in and literally saved by a fellow artist named François Millet.
Who?
Hmm? François Millet.
With a great François Millet?
Oh, great. He wasn't any greater than I was. He hadn't any fame at all, even in his own village. Oh, the great François Millet. Let me tell you about the great François Millet. He made me welcome. What a generous, great-hearted fellow he was. I'll never forget that first day.
Smith! Smith! Are all Englishmen named Smith?
Sometimes it seems that way.
Now, where can you sleep? Well, sleep anywhere. There are no soft places on the floor, so one is as good as another. Now, for dinner.
I feel badly. I can see there isn't very much, Monsieur Millet.
You cannot call a French painter Monsieur till he's received the Legion of Honor. And I have a better chance of being struck by lightning. You must call me François. Now, dinner. All we have are turnips. Unless, of course, Carl can scare up something.
Carl?
Carl Boulanger. He's also a painter, and he lives here, too.
Ah, speak of the devil. How shall we prepare the turnips tonight, François?
That tells me everything. Well, how about turnips remoulade?
We have no egg yolks.
Mm. I have it, Carl. Sautéed with mushrooms.
We have no butter. I don't trust your judgment when it comes to picking wild mushrooms.
Well, then I suppose we'll have to boil them as usual.
Who is this?
Oh, Smith. An Englishman. Smith, this madcap is Carl Boulanger.
How do you do?
He doesn't look like an Englishman. All Englishmen are supposed to be rich.
Smith is a painter.
Poor devil. Why didn't you arrange to be born in France and then you would have learned to starve properly?
I can starve as decently as any Frenchman. What's that?
What?
That canvas against the wall. I just noticed it.
No, that. I call it the Angelus.
Hmm. It isn't too bad, eh, Smith?
I've never seen anything like it. It's a masterpiece. There's a feeling of oneness with God.
Carl, I have a confession to make.
Yes, Professor?
I was offered 5 francs for it.
When?
Last week. Yes, a week ago, Thursday.
And what happened?
I turned it down.
You turned it down? François, 5 francs means a dozen eggs. A pound of butter.
I know, but you see, the man appeared anxious.
Yes?
And so I asked for 8 francs.
And?
He said he would think about it and let me know.
Oh, the kiss of death. Why didn't you take the 5 francs?
You mean you would have François sell the Angelus for 5 francs?
Right now I would sell it for a pork chop.
Sauteed with onions and with artichoke vinaigrette, salad niçoise, and a very dry Bordeaux.
Carl, when will you learn that the proper wine for pork is a light burgundy? I must educate your palate.
You have scorned. What a fantastic pun. Don't you get it, Smith?
No, the
English as a rule, Carl, are rather slow in these matters of humor.
François was also my painting teacher, and you see, has educated both my palate and my palette. You still don't get?
Yes. It is rather funny.
No, you're right. It is a rather feeble jest. But you see, it passes the time, and then we forget how hungry we are.
And how tired and disappointed and disillusioned.
Oh, come, Carl. One cannot have everything. Look at what we have in this room. Behold these canvases. A feast for the eye, a feast for the mind, a feast for the soul.
And not even a crumb for the stomach.
Be of good cheer, Carl. Perhaps tomorrow something will turn up.
Ah, I caught you. Another pun. You get it, Smith? Huh? What will turn up tomorrow will be another turnip for dinner, as usual.
Oh, yes.
Well, now, gentlemen. The situation is quite serious. We are on the verge of starvation.
As usual.
And we must come up with a solution.
I agree. What do you suggest, Francois?
I don't know. How about you, Smith?
Nothing occurs to me either.
Well, then, let's sleep on it.
Which we did. After having had, of course, a boiled turnip for dinner. The next morning, I was starved, but that was nothing unusual. I decided to take the bull by the horns. I looked at Millet's paintings. How could anyone in his right mind not jump at the chance to buy them? Accordingly, I placed a few under my arm, the Angelus, Man with a Hoe, the Woodcutter and Death, and I began to knock on doors. Practically every door was slammed in my face. Only one elderly woman deigned to talk to me at all.
What are you selling? I see. That painting nonsense.
Oh, but, madame, I assure
you... And have you joined the other two? The scoundrels, the ne'er-do-wells?
Madame, if you please...
The good-for-nothing lazy tramps who refuse to work for a living.
Madame, painting is one of the most difficult of all occupations.
Painting a house, maybe.
Madame, I am here to help you to get rich. You must admit that there are paintings which are worth millions, yes? Now, admit it.
Well...
Here is your golden opportunity. A few pennies invested today will bring fabulous dividends tomorrow.
Mm. How do I know?
Because these are the paintings of the great François Millet.
The great François Millet?
Yes, madame. These paintings will increase 100-fold, 1,000-fold in value. Because François Millet is a genius.
He is?
There's no doubt about it.
Who says so?
She slammed the door in my face. And at that moment, a great light exploded in my brain. Who says so? I raced home. I couldn't wait to share this flash of sudden insight with my companions.
Hunger creates great divisions, François. Continue, Smith.
She and everyone else in this town, they don't make up their own minds. They don't decide things for themselves.
Oh, but that's how people are everywhere.
And so she looks at you, François, and at me and at Carl. How's she to know that the paintings have merit?
It should be obvious.
Of course. The colors, the figures, why, it's all over the canvas.
Ah, but unfortunately, no one has told her that as yet.
What do you mean, no one? I've been trying to sell these paintings for months, years. I patiently tried to explain.
But who are you?
Who am I? I'm Carl Boulanger, a painter.
No, you're Carl Boulanger, a shiftless good-for-nothing who would prefer to beg for his bread sooner than work for it.
Who has perpetrated this infamous falsehood?
And so am I, and so is François.
What he says is true, Carl.
And yet, if someone in authority were to say... Ah, François Millet, truly a great master. Why, overnight, François would be the toast of the town.
Yes, authority. That's what the people look for. No one wants to make up his own mind.
Therefore, François, we shall have an authority to authenticate your greatness.
An authority?
Of course. A great Parisian authority.
I know Professor Louis de Courbet.
Who?
He's the most respected professor of art at the university.
No, he won't do, François.
But he's the most learned.
We don't want learned people. We want famous people.
Oh.
Ah, I have it. Madame Lucerne. She runs the most talked about salon in Paris.
You mean the most notorious?
If she says a painting is great, it'll be hailed as a masterpiece.
Yes, but does she know anything at all about painting?
Probably not.
Well, then how?
Well, the question is... Who should go?
You are the smoothest talker, Carl.
No, I nominate Smith to be our envoy.
Me? Why?
Because you're the handsomest.
Oh, but What does that have to do with the...
Do you recall the legend of the Golden Fleece?
Oh, yeah.
And the legendary band of ancient Greek heroes who went after it? Whom did they choose as their leader? Not Hercules, the strongest, or Ulysses, the wisest, but Jason, the handsomest. Because they knew it would be necessary to seduce a woman in order to win the prize.
Oh, but
may not have to go that far.
And what if he does? We must all make sacrifices for art.
Yes, and some of us must make heavier sacrifices than others. But, as you can see, there's more to becoming a famous artist than merely painting a great or even a good picture. Sometimes, one must play the game of love and even the game of death. However, all that is the affair of the second act, which I shall bring you in just a few moments.
When you say Budweiser, when you say Bud, you said a lot of things nobody else can say.
A lot of things, like choicest hops, rice, and best barley malt. The Budweiser ingredients listed proudly right there on the Budweiser label. There are less expensive ingredients, but you won't find them in Budweiser. No way. There's a lot more that goes into the brewing of Budweiser than just ingredients. But it's what comes out that counts most, and that's the Budweiser taste. And that speaks for itself, loud and clear. Hear it talking?
There is no other love. There's only something left. Because the king of beers is leading all the rest. When you say Budweiser, you've said it all.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
Dreams. We all seek to understand the many ways in which God reveals His Word. Throughout time, God has spoken to man in dreams. Jehovah said in the Old Testament, "Listen to my words. If a man be a prophet, I make myself known to him in visions. I speak to him in dreams." So, pay attention to your own dreams. They might well reveal flashes of the future, predictions and warnings of things to come. They may give you a glimpse of God's guidance to lead you back to the peace and security of His way. For your free booklet on dreams, write to the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. That's the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021.
Have to revise some of our ideas about art before our story is over. At any rate, we're back in the year 1892, and Mark Twain is chatting with a wealthy elderly Englishman in a hotel on the sun-washed shores of the French Riviera.
Now, Smith, what are you telling me? That some 25 or 30 years ago, you and the painter Francois Millet and...
Carl Boulanger.
Yes. And yourself were starving artists in a provincial French town.
Exactly.
And that you concocted some mad scheme to get Millet recognized?
Ah, but you haven't heard the scheme yet. You see, if you're a creative artist, people don't know you're good unless somebody who speaks with authority says so.
You get no argument from me on that score, Smith.
Well, they had the idea to send me to the salon of Madame Lucerne in Paris. She was a former mistress of King Louis Napoleon himself.
Which made her an eminent critic, connoisseur, and authority on the art.
Exactly.
Well, how did you propose to gain admission to Madame's salon? You were, after all, ragged, unknown.
Well, I did the only thing any sensible man would do under the circumstances. I broke into her bedroom. Don't be alarmed, madame. I'm not a burglar.
You are not a burglar?
And please don't pull on that bell cord.
Allow me to give you two reasons why you are a burglar. First, you break into my room.
But, madame...
Second, Under your arm, I see some paintings, which you have obviously stolen from my house.
Ah, no, madame. I haven't come here to steal paintings, but to present you with some.
Present me?
Yes, madame, because you are the supreme and sublime authority on art.
Ah.
Look at these, madame.
Hmm?
Isn't each a masterpiece?
Frankly, monsieur, I wouldn't have the faintest idea. Now, what is this game you wish to play with me?
A game?
All men have one game or another in mind where I am concerned. And since you are not half bad looking...
It is for a friend.
Ah.
The man is a genius. One word from you...
Oh, one word from me. How simple you make it all sound.
Oh, but it is simple for you. You've turned unknown men into great writers, composers overnight.
Oh, it's not a simple matter. And it doesn't happen overnight. The man must have something.
François Millet has everything. He's a genius.
Oh, the woods are filled with genius.
Oh, but surely, I mean, just look at these paintings.
Now, I could make a great painter out of you.
Me?
Ah, you are the love bandit.
The what?
You break into the boudoirs of famous ladies, and you leave behind a painting as a memento of the adventure. These you have here are excellent for the purpose. Shall we begin?
These paintings are not mine.
Who is to know the difference?
They're the work of François Millet.
Must we discuss that? Tiresome Millet.
No, you see how each painting bears his hallmark, his unique style?
Monsieur, these things are lost on me. I know nothing of art.
Oh, isn't there anything you could do to help Millet?
Oh, sit beside me, and we can talk more comfortably.
Yes, yes. Surely there's something you could do for him.
Why?
Well, because one day he would be... a glory to France.
Oh, monsieur, you're an Englishman.
Yes.
Why should you worry about the glory of France?
Well, the glory of the world.
Oh, well, I see we must decently dispose of Millet. There's only one way I could hope to help him.
Oh, how?
He would have to be dead.
Dead?
I'm sorry, but that's the way it goes with geniuses. No. Where were we?
Dead?
Dead? The woman is crazy.
Gentlemen, the woman is right.
But Smith...
It's a matter of history. She convinced me.
Do you mean Francois to die?
That is rather extreme. Look, an artist has to be starved and dead before he's acknowledged. It happens so often, we could write a law that says... The prices that the public will pay for a man's pictures will only climb after he dies.
But what good does it do the dead artist if others make money on his pictures?
Death lends grandeur to a man. Death makes his name illustrious.
Why?
I don't know, gentlemen. I don't know.
There's no way out, Francois. You simply have to die.
Oh, now, look here.
Let us hear him out first, Carl.
Now, take several weeks. Better, several months to die.
Uh-huh.
And in the meantime, paint. Paint day and night. Enlarge your stock of paintings. Leave behind a ton of work. And Carl and I will make a fortune.
A fortune?
On the works of the late, great François Millet.
Oh, I'll have no part of this.
Wait. What Smith says is not devoid of merit.
François.
Look at us. How we live. How far are we from death? How much longer can we starve like this? Freeze. Do without. In a few years, we will be young no longer. And we'll be dead in any event. This way...
This way is madness. I won't let you die to make me rich, François.
No, but listen...
That would be enough out of you too, Smith.
You didn't let me finish. I said Carl and I would make a fortune selling your paintings, François, which we would then split three ways.
Three ways?
Yes, Carl, three ways. You and I and François.
François?
What did you think I meant for François to actually die?
But you say...
No. Why should François die? He'll just vanish, change his name, and we'll bury a dummy and cry over it and...
Smith, you are the greatest scoundrel to ever live.
Thank you.
What a magnificent plan. What do you say, François?
Well, would it be proper to play this kind of trick on the world? On the other hand, since the world will have it no other way...
But will it work?
We'll put it to the test.
How?
Carl, you and I will go out and do some painting. You head north and I'll go south.
Choose a villa or a business establishment of some sort. Make sure the owner notices you. He'll come over out of curiosity, and the rest will be easy. So I chose a large country house and set up my easel and began to sketch. I saw the proprietor standing on an upper veranda. I paid no attention to him. I knew that sooner or later he'd saunter over.
Hey, that's not bad. Not bad at all. Yes. I think you captured that pretty well. Hey, you're good. You're good. You know that.
Well, thank you, monsieur. Well, I ought to be good. Look who taught me. Let me see if I have one of his works with me. Oh, here we are, in my satchel. I suppose you recognize that signature down at the right there?
I beg your pardon?
He was my teacher.
Oh.
You mean you don't know the signature of François Millet? What have you been spending your life? It's Millet, François Millet.
Millet. Yes? Oh, of course, of course. What could I have been thinking about? Of course, Millet. I recognize that now.
Millet, the greatest painter in France.
Yes, Millet. This little sketch is genuine, Millet. Well,
how can you fail to see the brush stroke?
Oh, of course. Is it for sale?
For sale? I may not be rich, but I'm not that poor.
You know, I really would like to buy it.
Well, I don't know.
It's a genuine Millet.
No, I'd like to sell it to you because I can see you really do appreciate great art.
I do.
But, well, there's a practical consideration.
Huh?
Yes, I'd be a fool to sell it now.
Why?
Why? You mean you don't know?
No.
Millet is on his deathbed. The doctors say he can't live 3 months.
Oh.
And once he dies, his pictures can't be had for love or money.
Monsieur, I'll give you 800 francs for that little sketch of his, huh?
Oh. You really do love it, don't you?
It's a genuine Millet.
Oh, dear. Oh, I am a fool. All right, take it. 800 francs, Twain. And Millet would have sold it for a bottle of wine. You know, 2 years ago, it sold at auction for 80,000. It's a mad world. Well, when I came home, Carl was dancing for joy.
1,000 francs! Yeah! I sold Francois's picture of the little girl and her mother for 1,000 francs!
Well, your 1,000 francs sale, Carl, and Smith's 800. What a feast we can make this evening.
This evening, Francois, you'll have to get sick.
Sick? Oh, I never felt better in my life.
Tonight, you will take to your bed with the illness that will finally kill you.
All right. After dinner.
You'll have to look pale, wan, weak, for all the distinguished visitors. They'll flock here in droves.
Why?
Well, because they'll want to see you die.
He's right, Francois. No one would walk across the street to see an artist who's alive, but they'd travel the length and breadth of Europe to see one dead.
Well, you may as well prepare yourself, Francois. You're about to become an institution. And this place is going to be a shrine.
You wish to see me?
I see, madame, you've forgotten me.
Which one are you? Oh, Mr. Smith.
I'm sorry to intrude.
Oh, well, I am just listening to Mr. Schumann here. He's a composer. Oh, excuse us, please, for just a moment, Monsieur Schumann. Well, now, Mr. Smith, how have you been? Where have you been keeping yourself?
I wonder, madame, if you remember your promise.
Oh, I never forget a promise.
To help my friend?
Your friend?
Yes, François Millet.
Millet. Oh, yes, of course, I recall now. But, Mr. Smith, I also remember telling you there was only one way I could help him. He would have to be dead.
Yes. Well, madame, he's getting there.
Oh, Mr. Smith, we're all getting there.
I know, but he should arrive there in less than a month.
Eh? What are you saying?
Madame, he's on his deathbed.
Oh, this is tragic. Here, sit by me. Now, what is he dying of?
I believe
A broken heart.
A broken heart? Wonderful.
Yes, his heart has been broken because the world has failed to recognize his genius.
Oh, this Monsieur Millet, he's on his deathbed, actually?
Actually.
Oh, what a cooperative gentleman. Oh, he certainly deserves to become famous.
I brought you some of his paintings.
Oh, yes, I see. I see. Oh, the unmistakable stamp of genius. His name shall become a household word.
Is that how it's done? Well, it's a way. But is it all that simple?
No, not really.
We'll encounter a few problems. After all, François Millet has to die in a convincing manner and in front of witnesses. Well, that's why we have third acts, isn't it? I shall return in a few moments.
Cold medicines. Choose. The green liquid you take every 4 hours when confined to home or at bedtime. That's 4 hours relief per dose. Or give your cold a contact. Contact's different. Just one capsule works up to 12 hours, all through the day and all through the night. Contact doesn't have ingredients for pain and cough like the liquid. And just one contact gives you as long relief from sneezing, drips, and congestion as 3 doses of the liquid. The tiny time pills do it. Now, for all day and all night relief, what'll you choose? Stay home with your cold or take Contact?
Give your cold to Contact.
Use only as directed.
Time, August 15th, 1944. Keeping pressure on the forces of Germany, the Allies decide to make a massive landing on the southern coast of France. Hundreds of Allied ships wait quietly for the signal to launch. This is James Drury with Navy Chronicle. Allied chiefs of staff meet. Plans are made. Efforts are coordinated. The attack will close the gap between campaigns in Italy and Normandy. After 4 months of preliminary bombing, ending in a massive airstrike by our 1,400 planes, nearly 900 United States and British ships put thousands of troops ashore. A force of 9 escort aircraft carriers provide air cover and close air support for the assault. Allied warships destroy opposing enemy shore guns. The invasion is a speedy success, and the United States Navy was there.
You've been listening to Navy Chronicle, an historical series with James Drury and the U.S. Navy Band.
Today, our entertainments are dominated by something known as the caper. This is usually an elaborate scheme to swindle something from somebody. Money from a bank, secrets from a spy ring, anything, anywhere, anytime. Like most art forms, this one is hardly new. We're listening to one right now. It was inspired by a short story by Mark Twain. And if the word had existed in Twain's day, he might very well have named this piece the François Millet Caper.
I don't understand at all, Smith. Why did you need this Madame Lucerne? After all, you proved you could make money by using Millet's name. Both you and Carl had already sold his pictures.
Yes, that was good enough for the provinces, Twain. But we wanted more than just a little local reputation. We required fame. And for that, you needed Paris. And no creative artist has ever conquered Paris without the help of a woman. Meanwhile, we were having our problems. Millet didn't mind starving when we didn't have a sou. But now that there was some money...
But if I don't eat, I'll die.
Well, that's the idea, François.
But since I'm not to die, actually, what difference should it make?
But people come to see you. You can't look healthy and robust on your deathbed.
Smithy's right. The reporter from that English journal yesterday did give you several suspicious looks.
Meanwhile, I'm not painting.
You can't have everything.
And at mealtimes, I can't have anything.
Well, your jokes are becoming feeble, at any rate.
I have an idea. Why don't we say I'm too ill to see anyone? In that way, I can eat like an elephant.
And you'll get to weigh as much as an elephant, too. We won't be able to get you into your coffin.
Who's getting into a coffin?
Well, you'll have to be carried out of here when the time comes.
That is something no one has explained to me. How and when do I die, and how and when am I to be buried?
All the details have not yet been worked out. Suddenly, Twain, we were invaded. Everyone wanted to see the great François Millet. Carl and I almost wore ourselves out guarding the door. No, I'm sorry, monsieur, the master is too ill to receive anyone. Yes, yes, of course, we will convey your regards. Meanwhile, Millet was painting away, piling up stock, as we called it. And Madame Lucerne was selling them, discreetly, of course, in Paris. The great sale was the Angelus for 2,200 francs. Little did we know that the day was coming when France would struggle to own it, and a stranger would come along and capture it for $500,000 cash. And meanwhile, we were having problems with Millet, or I should say, with his appetite. I don't understand it, Carl. He gets fatter every day.
Well, fatter and healthier looking.
Yes, this won't do. Carl, do you allow him to sneak in some food on the sly?
How can you accuse me?
Well, how can he gain weight on tea and toast?
Well, especially tea without sugar and toast without butter.
Wait. Inside, listen. Inside his room. Do you hear what I hear?
Well, I'm not sure.
Shh. That has to be the sound of a spoon against a bowl. He's eating.
But how?
Oh, why didn't we think of it? Somebody's smuggling food into him from the outside.
But who?
That has to be the answer. Sneaking food into his room through the window. Now, you sit here. I'll steal around to the back of the house. What are you doing here?
Why,
it's Madame Maufrigneur.
Well,
explain yourself, Madame.
Well, sir, François Millet is a genius, a great genius.
He is? Who says so?
Why, everyone says so. It's a known fact. And when I heard he was dying, I thought perhaps... What do the doctors know? The poor man probably needs a decent meal. Well, no one is allowed into the house, and so
Yes. Well, we can't have any more of this.
Why not?
Because the doctor says food will kill him.
Should it matter? He's dying anyway. And you should see how happy he is with my soup and the roast fowl and the fish.
Madame, he is not a goose to be stuffed for pâté.
You needn't yell at me. I was only doing my Christian duty.
We only want him to die in comfort.
And I want him to die happy. Poor fellow. He starved most of his life. Must he go hungry to his grave?
But he's very ill.
He looks fine to me. Fat and rosy. Perhaps my cooking can save his life. Or do you want him to die?
Well, why would I want him to die? Well, there's nothing to be done. She could prove a great embarrassment. So we let her deliver the food every day. And of course, Carl and I were forced to eat it. Meanwhile, the house was besieged. People came from everywhere for the death watch. It was unbelievable.
Read what it says here in the Paris paper. The lamp flickers for François Millet, great painter, said to be in his last hours.
Yes, all over the world. Look, England, the final chapter in the Millet story. America, look. Curtains for François.
I shall die in earnest if I am not fed.
Oh, what are you doing here, François? Why aren't you in bed? Wasting away.
Look at me. Nothing but skin and bones while you two gorge yourself on Madame Maufrigneur's heavenly cuisine. It's not fair.
This is the thanks we get for making the man a genius.
Hang being a genius. When can I get a decent meal?
Really, Smith? What? We should hire a butler.
François, back into bed. Quickly, quickly.
Just the wing of the chicken?
No.
Not even the neck?
Into your room. Quickly, François.
I might as well die and be done with it.
Now, let me see who that is.
Oh, let me in quickly.
Oh, Madame Lucerne, please.
You know the whole world is talking about the great François Millet?
Yes, madame. A tragedy.
The demand for his paintings rises by the hour.
We have plenty, stacks of them, which madame can take back to Paris and sell.
Oh, no, monsieur. They will sell better after he dies. The poor man. He's at death's door, is he not?
Yes, madame. Standing on the threshold, as it were.
Oh, may I pay my respects?
Well, madame, you
Mr. See... Smith, please tell your friend I am so attached to the master that I shall be desolated if I cannot see him at least once before... Oh, I cannot bring myself to see it.
Madame, this way, please. Francois, a beautiful lady to see you. Oh, poor Francois, he seems to be in a coma.
Monsieur, he looks remarkably healthy for one who is supposed to be terribly ravaged by illness.
Looks are deceptive, you know.
I thought you said he was at death's door.
Oh, he is.
Oh, well, timing, you realize, is everything in life, as well as death. This would be an excellent week.
It would?
Next week, everyone will be talking about a new opera by Wagner, and we expect some stunt or other from Alexandre Dumas the Younger. But this is a very quiet week.
Oh, I see.
Of course, I realize that man goes when he is summoned to the divine presence, and not a minute before.
How true.
However,
yes.
There is always the possibility that one is too busy to hear the summons.
Yes. Well, as you can see, madame, he is failing before our very eyes.
Oh, poor man. Well, I must return to Paris, where I shall say, of course, that he died in my arms.
How tragic.
Yes. Well, I must hurry back there to speak with all the journalists.
Of course.
I had taken the liberty to order a coffin.
A coffin?
Yes. It should be at your doorstep at any moment.
Oh.
A most splendid final home for a man of such magnificence.
Thank you, madame.
Well, I felt it was the least I could do. And now, if you will excuse me, I must return.
Of course.
Oh, do you mind if I leave this valise here? It might be too much trouble to carry back.
Of course not, madame.
I thought I would stay longer, and I had brought a change of costume, but that dress bores me. Why not give it to some deserving charity?
As you wish, madame. A few hours after she left us, there was another knock on the door. And it was, you guessed it, the coffin. A small coffin. How would Francois ever get into it? Oh, what was I thinking? Francois wouldn't get into the coffin. Carl and I had already prepared a dummy for that purpose. Our basic problem was...
How am I supposed to get out of the house?
Are we ready to make the announcement?
We have a problem. Francois.
Well, I thought you were working on that problem, Smith.
Well,
I could sneak out through the back window.
Oh, the house is surrounded.
And where would you go? Everyone knows you for miles around, especially now. Smith, you should have thought of this before.
I did think of it. I just couldn't come up with any solution.
I can't die until I know where I'm going.
Would we could all say that.
And the best time for it, as that Madame Lucerne said, is this week.
Ah, Madame Lucerne. Why didn't we ask her to propose a way out of this difficulty?
Madame Lucerne, of course. She foresaw the problem, and she's given us a way out.
How?
Hand me her valise.
Well, how can her valise
here,
give
here,
out?
Here. See? You see this costume? A black dress.
Yes.
Black hat. A veil. These are for the lady in black.
Who is the lady in black?
Oh, a mysterious mourner. A woman who loved you deeply, passionately.
But who is she?
Oh, no one knows. Put on the dress.
Come on.
Hurry, Francois.
Come on, I feel ridiculous.
You'd better start feeling sad.
Huh.
Very sad. No, just a few quiet sobs. Nothing loud, nothing uncontrolled. Just, let's say, the dignified weeping of a woman of high breeding and great dignity. Eh?
Is that what she's supposed to be?
Oh, well, would our friend Francois choose any other kind of mistress? Oh, by the way, is the coffin sealed?
Coffin is ready.
Fix your veil, Francois.
Yes.
Oh, fine, excellent. Come, my friends. Those of us who loved him best, his pupils and the mysterious woman who loved him, we have an announcement to make to the world. Open the door, Carl. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a most melancholy statement to make.
So you buried Francois Mireille, eh, Smith?
Yes, Twain, we buried the dummy in the coffin.
There was a great funeral.
Oh, yes.
And Millet, disguised as the woman, escaped detection.
The world was convinced Millet had died.
What happened to him?
Oh, can you keep a secret?
I can only try.
You remember that elderly gentleman I pointed out to you earlier this morning? That...
That was Francois Millet?
That was Francois Millet. For once, a great artist was not starved and killed by indifference and neglect and then given the vain and empty pomp of a loud and meaningless funeral. No, we saw to that. Francois Millet has never known and will never know another hungry day.
Who was it that said, "Live well, and that's the best revenge"? Live well. So few artists can manage it in the face of indifference and just plain misunderstanding. And when Mark Twain wrote the story, he did it in the spirit of, here's one for our side. Well, we're always on your side. And we'll be back here in just a few moments.
Sound familiar? Each year, fire claims a devastating toll in human life and property. Last year, fire killed over 11,000 people and destroyed close to $4 billion in property. Underwriters Laboratories field engineer Ray McNabb says you can help prevent this terrible killer from striking you or the ones you love by following these simple precautions.
Check the condition of electrical cords, appliances, and receptacles. Make certain that electrical cords are not frayed or placed beneath carpeting. Always keep matches and lighters away from children. And store paints and other flammable liquids in sealed containers.
And know exactly where your fire extinguisher is located.
That's right. Keep a fire extinguisher in the kitchen, the garage, and where your heaters are located. And be sure it is accessible should the fire start in that area.
This is public safety information from Underwriters Laboratories and this station.
Is he living? Or is he dead? Well, of course, he's dead today, but was he living back in 1892, the date of the story? Was Mark Twain playing a gentle hoax on all of us? Or was the old practical joker himself the victim of a practical joke? We'll never know. But we do know we'll be here 7 times each week. Our cast included Alexander Scourby, Court Benson, Paul Hecht, and Bryna Rayburn. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
I'll go up, get my passport approved, and then I'll step over to the fence. You see over there?
Yeah.
Where those peasants are standing with their packs?
Yes.
Now, you just mosey up against that fence.
Oh, no.
And I'll slip you my passport right through the bars of the fence.
What are you saying?
Then you get on the regular inspection line. Hand it over and trust in Providence and the fact that the inspector has the eyesight of a shad. You'll pull through, never fear.
But the description on the passport...
Ah, what about it?
It is your description. It describes a man of 50, and I'm only...
That's all right. I told you the man has the eyes of a shad.
A shad.
He couldn't see the difference if his life depended on it.
But my life depends
Don't
on it.
Don't you fret. It'll come out right as nails.
But when I hand him your passport...
You won't be handing him my passport. It'll be your passport.
Well, what do you mean?
You'll hand it to him as if it's your passport.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
CBS 4 Seattle, this is KIXI. Mostly cloudy with rain at times through Thursday. Highs in the low 40s and lows in the mid-30s. And currently in downtown Seattle, 40 degrees. It's 38 at the airport.
Filling the air with bright and beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News is next on KIXI. It's now 11 o'clock.
CBS News. There's a published report out saying the Central Intelligence Agency has funneled at least $6 million in secret cash payments to anti-communist political factions in Italy. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS radio network. The New York Times reports that the CIA is pouring the money into Italy to prevent further gains by the Communist Party in national elections. The story, carrying the byline of reporter Seymour Hersh, says that final approval for the payments was made by President Ford on December 8th. The report also says that Secretary of State Kissinger was known to have been extremely concerned when the communists got more than a third of the votes in Italy's local elections last June. The Times report comes as another political crisis is brewing in Italy. The Socialist Party is expected to withdraw its support from the fragile coalition government headed by Prime Minister Aldo Moro of the Christian Democratic Party. More news in a moment.
Hi, world. Denny Bracken here with the great bicentennial chef himself, Mike Roy, all decked out in the red, white, and blue. Got a few words about the cooking thing tomorrow and in the months to come over the CBS radio net. Speak, old revolutionary.
Don't I look funny in my fife and drum outfit? Tomorrow we're going to spell the whole plan out. It's going to be historic. It'll take us back to the days of our founding fathers, the kinds of food they ate. Then every Thursday we'll feature a bicentennial meal for
you. If you think Yankee Doodle was a dandy, wait till you tune in Mike Roy's cook thing tomorrow on the CBS radio net.
I'm Janet Lee. I do volunteer work on behalf of mentally retarded children and adults. And I've learned that many people confuse mental retardation with mental illness. Mentally retarded people are not mentally ill, not mentally disturbed at all. They just learn more slowly than most of us do. It gives me great personal satisfaction when I'm able to help a mentally retarded person take even one small step on the road to independence. Won't you help, too, by supporting your local association of the National Association for Retarded Citizens?
The Washington Post reports that a Soviet-guided missile destroyer and a tank transport ship are sailing toward Angolan waters. The Post said no tanks were seen on the transport vessel, but sources have not ruled out the possibility that assault troops were on the ship. However, the Post also says it speculated the transport ship could be going to Angola to withdraw Soviet weaponry from that country. Senator John Tunney, Democrat of California, says he's received information about American arms shipments to anti-communist factions in Angola. Tunney gave these details.
I have received new evidence that American pilots have been flying American-built C-130 Hercules cargo aircraft, the workhorse of the war in Vietnam, to airlift arms from Zaire into Angola on the west coast of Africa. American flight crews, I understand, may have been flying as many as 4 and 5 missions a day into Angola. An operation of that magnitude also requires large maintenance crews on the ground to support it. One must ask, who pays for these pilots? Who pays for the ground crews? Whose money pays for those aircraft?
Tunney's remarks drew a response from the Pentagon. Officials there said no American military aircraft or pilots or defense contractors are involved in flying in or over Angola. The Federal Energy Administration late Tuesday announced it is lifting restrictions on how often prices for gasoline and home heating oil can be changed. Since the Arab embargo in 1973, the government had allowed price changes to be made only once a month. In Culver City, California, Tuesday, a man with a gun walked into a bank and held the manager at bay. The unusual thing about this is what the man wanted. Elmer Lindberg, special agent in charge of the Los Angeles FBI office, told CBS News what happened as bank manager Joe Ferguson dealt with the armed man.
Mr. Ferguson had a gun in his back and then turned to the subject and asked him if he desired to talk to the FBI. He did not make a demand for money, but he made a demand that bird seed should be delivered to every bank in the Los Angeles area so the birds could be fed. He also made demands that grass be planted on the lawns in front of banks so they would be green. He also made demands that a number of citizens in the Los Angeles area walk down to the ocean hand in hand and be cleansed.
Elmer Lindbergh, special agent in charge of the Los Angeles FBI office. Now this.
We've got to save the children and save the world. Help them to grow to know that life is worth living.
All over the world, there are children who don't know that life is worth living. How could they? They live on the edge of disaster, sick, hungry, illiterate, never knowing what tomorrow will bring, or if there'll be a tomorrow. If we can help save these children, we can help save the world. They are our future, these children of the world. You can help give them real hope. Please, send for information on how to help. Write Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York, 10017. That's Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York, 10017.
We've got to save the children.
They're saying it might get down to 40 below zero tonight in northwestern Minnesota. It was 7 below Tuesday in East Grand Forks, Minnesota, as a dangerous winter storm sweeps across the Midwest. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.